Hi, everyone. Boy, we've got a great session today, if I do say so myself. What I mean by that is with a lot of humility, because this is such a vast, vast topic, what we've been studying in mystery school, I'm just excited about what I have to share. That's a better way of saying it. But I just want to check in with you first and see how you're doing. How was it last week, living with the idea that everything is divine? And did you work more with the metaphor of the stage and love and strife on the stage? The ego often doesn't like these concepts. It feels really unsettling. And my suggestion from my own experience is, when I'm resisting these ideas on any level, you know, just acknowledge that. Yeah, this is weird. You know, I am feeling resistance. That's enough. That's enough right there, you know, to have the mind start going into arguments and counterpoints to refute these ideas. That's very natural. And that doesn't mean I'm not asking you to surrender into what is appropriate for you. I'm not saying wholesale take mystery school as what is appropriate for you at this moment in your path, you know, but instead of just thinking it through and believing every thought going off in your head, make those decisions from a perspective of wholeness and with what is resonating in your body is what I would offer. Dropping down into your intuition and into that stillness that you feel when you're in nature or in your most peaceful state. Then see what that has to say about what we've been exploring and just watch what happens. Regardless, these practices are incredibly powerful. I've been poring over these Peter Kingsley texts, sharing them with you, and there is more to share. You know, we're going to conclude, we're going to put a pin in Mystery School today with the points I'll leave you with today. There's much more to explore, and it's not because it's particularly complicated and there's all these points we haven't gotten to. This is more than enough that we've explored here together, but I like returning to the ideas after we have some time to sit with it and let it do its work. So I will pick up this thread again, I know, no doubt, because I'm continuing to process it myself, and I will share at a later date. You know, we'll drop back into mystery school. But we will conclude today, and I'll do my best to keep this around a half hour again, with some time for introspection, with some poetry. But one final thought about the ego. We need it. We need this sense of ourselves that we move around in and the roles we play. It's not that they're unimportant. You know, this is the vehicle we have in our earth experience. You know, you are a certain package, if you will. You have a certain family, you have certain roles. That's okay. It's how we learn and grow and experience. But the trick is, with all of this, is to also be touching that which is so deeper and is wanting actually to be known through the package of you. So to have that being your wingman, so to speak, that's incredible. That changes everything. That changes all these roles you play and gives a numinosity, a power, a clarity to them that you could never extract externally by a program, a diet, an association with something external. This is off the charts authenticity that can come through and change our lives. And this dance of holding our awareness in check, holding our focus, and knowing that the quote-unquote enemy is not out there anywhere. The thing wreaking havoc is the undisciplined mind. It is as simple as that. So to have the courage to use these mystery school principles to tackle that, in my experience, is huge. So we'll have one more session today. I want to begin by sharing some poetry about the strawberry moon, which started last night in its new phase. Today is the last day of May, and so we're just heading into the strawberry moon and the whole cycle of it, which will be largely in the month of June. So this is what I wrote about the new moon, strawberry moon. This early phase of summer, this strawberry season, this leaning forward into the mighty embrace of the sun at its wondrous zenith. It's time to shine. How do I feel about being at full strength? Are there areas in my life where I'm ripe and red and succulent? Am I at ease in my own power? What aspects of my being are longing to step forward in heat and passion and vitality? With the summer solstice hastening, with the strawberries full and sweet, square the shoulders and dare. It's amazing to think that already in the month of June, we will experience the summer solstice when the sun is at its peak in the Northern Hemisphere. So that's coming right up. And to be in a seasonal space with that and just embracing mystery school principles, if this is resonating for you, and just by the moment allowing, surrendering to this authentic self, this mystery and wonder, the real you, the clear and honest and brilliant and lovely and beautiful and strong and confident you, the one who holds the answers to any question you might possibly have, allowing that strength, just like the sun, to pierce through you, the director, and shine upon the stage. That is powerful work. And I have to tell you that just working these principles with myself, holding my own mind to account, it has such an amazing and surprising difference that will just crop up somewhat humorously. And let me give you an example of that. My daughter and I were driving the other day. I think I'd picked her up from school or something. And we were just heading home. And we were at an intersection waiting for the light to turn. And then we just heard these squealing of tires and this, this cacophony of sound. And these two cars almost collided, because one had pulled out in front of it, of the other, and, it was clearly that driver error. But the other woman in the other vehicle was able to shut down fast enough and not hit it, broadside. And we were just sitting there watching the whole thing. And, when you're in those moments, everything slows down and speeds up at the same time. And I know you know what I mean by that. You're totally focused. You're not thinking anything else, past, future, the grocery list, anything, what somebody said. You're just suddenly right there in the sensory experience of that moment, and you're paying full attention. And we were watching this happen. And I said to my daughter, I said it in the weirdest way, and then I was aware when I said it. I said, oh my God. I said, we almost watched that happen. Oh my gosh, you could have knocked me over with a feather. I laughed out loud because I thought, oh yeah, mystery school is doing its work, because that was a weird way to say that, you know, and I love it. I'm like, oh man, my brain is rebooting. Thank God. You know, because the witness was in that statement. How I said that to my daughter, we almost watched that happen. Not, oh, look what almost happened. I wasn't on the stage. I wasn't on the stage. And I wasn't even really in the director's chair. I was in those that sensory experience. And I believe the portal was open. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said it that way. We almost watched that happen. There is a great spaciousness there, and I love it. It's changing everything about me. And I think the most beautiful thing I can say is that no matter what is happening externally, I can find peace. With the horrific news that so often bombarding us on a daily basis. This is our only way, I offer, out of these horrific jams that humanity finds itself in, whether it's guns or war or the precious innocence, the assault on the precious innocence among us, including ourselves. I feel the only real solutions will come from that place of stillness on an individual by individual awakening of that. So we're doing great work for our planet, for our earth, for our world, for our families, for our communities when we are engaging this work, and it certainly changes your individual life. So I just encourage you to press on and be playful, be hopeful, but hold your mind to account because it's wily. It's wily. And remember, all these Peter Kingsley texts are somewhat wily in nature too, because you have to have a coyote sensibility to get in, you know, to the trickster nature of our own minds. So moving on to today's lesson, I have used both the texts of Reality and Catafalque by Peter Kingsley, and I've largely quoted in Mystery School thus far from Reality. I'll quote a little bit more from it today, and then I'm going to read one passage from Catafalque, and I will also do a Mystery School session in the future from Catafalque. I know I will, but it won't be immediately. But I just wanted you to know, you know, sort of which text I was primarily pulling from. And I do want to share a few ideas from Reality right now, because, you know, thinking about this filter, these roles, these identities, when I'm talking about that filter, I'm just repeating what I've said before. We're talking about the filter of past experience, what we think we need to defend ourselves from, beliefs we've learned in childhood that we think are set in stone and we can't challenge in any way, like what is the role of work? What is the role of money? What is the role of relationship? All of these things, these are the filters and the roles and the identities, that's a big one, that get in the way of the authentic self flowing through the director, changing things on the stage. So we are both human and divine from this perspective, okay? And when we're really lost on the stage, we're really deeply into the material world, thinking that's the only thing there is. When we're way into the other end of the spectrum, maybe having a peak experience, maybe in complete stillness, maybe in complete joy or surrender or love, an experience of love, we are knowing our eternal selves. And the director portal is sort of the passageway in between. That's our human form that is awake and saying, okay, what's happening here? How can I look at the stage and just read it as clues, not as who I am? When we get invested in any one of those roles being our identity, we are committing ourselves to a certain amount of suffering to let go of that. So by all means, I'm telling this to myself, let these identities go. We use them. We play with them. We embody them loosely, like a loose garment, like clothing that you would wear for the day, but it's not you. When you think it's you, then you'll have suffering. It's just as simple as that. So what does Peter Kingsley, by way of the pre-Socratic Greeks, Parmenides and Empedocles, offer as an assistance for maintaining that perspective? And I want to read to you straight from reality, from his text, because there is a practice in addition to the ones that we've been doing that will help with this. And I think as I read this, you will find it strikes a similar chord with quote unquote being in the present moment. Okay, it's another way of talking about that exact same process. But I just want to make a distinction here that Peter Kingsley himself makes in his text that we have to watch, because being in the present moment is also sort of commercialized right now. Not if you're really, really doing it. If you're really, really doing it, then whatever is happening, you're saying yes to that, meaning yes, this is happening, and what's going on with me? What are my reactions right now? How can I keep the portal open? That is being in the present moment, being in the senses and asking what is really happening here, not just getting lost on the stage. But there's, just as with anything and the wily nature of our egos and the human experience, you know, it gets co-opted into memes and whatever, and oh, just be in the present moment. And it's just like so annoying. And I know you know when you've encountered a really superficial level of that. So be hip to that too. You know, be discerning to that as well. The real discipline of that, you know, is dropping into the depth of your being and feeling that spaciousness and asking, you know, how may I serve here? What is really going on? Not just glibly, you know, getting ice cream or whatever and being in the present moment. There's more to it than that. And it's much richer and more rewarding than that. But anyway, as I read Peter Kingsley, you're going to find, I think, that you'll hear some similarities with that concept of the present moment. He refers to a term called metis, M-E-T-I-S. Quote from Peter Kingsley, metis was the Greek term for cunning, skillfulness, practical intelligence, and especially for trickery. It was what could make humans at the most basic and down-to-earth level equal to the gods. Metis might sound like just another concept, but really it was the opposite of everything we understand by concepts. It meant a particular quality of intense awareness that always manages to stay focused on the whole, on the lookout for hints, however subtle, for guidance in whatever form it happens to take, for signs of the route to follow, however quickly they might appear or disappear. And in the world of metis, there is no neutral ground, no second chance. The more you let yourself become a part of it, the more you begin to discover that absolutely everything, including the fabric of reality itself, is trickery and illusion. Either you learn to stay alert or you will be led astray. There is no pause for rest or hesitating in between. Parmenides chose the word helplessness rather than any other to evoke the human condition. In Greek, the word is emekania, which literally means without a ruse. It was used to describe people who have been tricked, entrapped, outwitted, who are deprived of any resources in a hopeless situation. And it was the one word used to define to perfection, the result of a total lack of metis. Then comes Parmenides' reference to steering. As any Greek knew, the only way of steering horses on a chariot or a ship across the ocean was through metis. To be able to steer, one had to know all the tricks of the road or the sea, to be watching completely in the moment, allowing one's mind to wander was not allowed. Always it was a matter of keeping both eyes on the path ahead, looking out for warnings and above all, for anything that could serve as a signpost or sign. But it was also a matter of listening, of being fully alert in every sense. Even a minute of deafness or blindness and one was lost. There is a good reason why the imagery of journeying is so important for the language of Metis. It's because of the speed involved. There is the absolute need to keep focused in spite of the way everything is constantly changing or appearing to change. Metis has nothing to do with argument or careful reasoning because there is not even time to think. There are no moments for leisure because everything happens far too quickly. The demands of one's awareness are enormous, and the fact that Parmenides happens to use this language of Metis rather than anything else to define the human condition can be viewed as a promise or a threat. We can see it as either, as a hope of rediscovering something we have lost, or as a warning sign on the horizon, whichever we wish. And a few pages later, Peter Kingsley again, Metis is so governed by its own inner logic that it destroys any expectations, shatters all the normal molds. Whatever Metis touches is graced with such precision that it very rarely seems neat and tidy. Following the reasonable and sensible route, turning away from the risks of deception is not its style. It looks for certainty in the realm of uncertainty, not anywhere else. It always is heading straight into the heart of danger. And the reality that the goddess, remember back to Parmenides and his vision of a goddess, the reality is that she is pointing us to is not some safe haven from the senses. She is showing us how to steer our way through the ocean of existence, how to navigate a world riddled with cunning and deception, how to find stillness in the middle of movement, the proof of oneness in apparent separation, the evidence of something beyond our senses through the use of reading and hearing. And I think you'll remember back on maybe the first or second installment of Mystery School, or maybe in our prep work, I talked about Empedocles expanding on the work of Parmenides and then adding the elements and the senses. And so we talked about the elements when we were talking about the stage. And now I want to put a pin in, you know, the senses, the sensory experience. So the senses hold a really amazing role in our human walk because they can certainly deceive us. You know, we think we see what we see instead of seeing through it. But yet you can use all of your senses, hearing, sound, taste, touch, feeling. You can use all of those in a symphony of awareness practice. So, in other words, in any moment, just seek to be aware of witnessing all the senses happening at one time and know that that is you opening up the portal. Okay, so being aware of all the senses working at one time is one way of practicing Metis. And I absolutely love the passages I have shared with you today, because to me, the language makes it like this daring adventure, like, oh yeah, I want to drop into Metis. I want to follow that. It's wisdom and universal intelligence and power and love defined. And it's right there for us if we get the hell off the stage, right? And it's, we're not helping anything being lost on the stage. We're not helping anything. We're certainly not helping ourselves. So I love thinking, you know, there's something in the human spirit that wants to go into the unknown. And this is just languaged so beautifully, in my opinion. Like, it's exciting for me to think of it like, yeah, I am so doing this. You know, it gives me the impetus to take on the scatter of my own mind when I think of the rewards of it. I mean, I'm just going to say it plainly. Like, why would I settle for such second best? And it is a discipline, but it is also home. This is our home. Metis, this state of being in harmony with the authentic nature of the divine. So with that, I want to add one more thought. And that is, we have this idea of metis now to work with, using the senses. And if I were to distill all of Peter Kingsley and Jung's work into one sentence, and this is certainly what Peter Kingsley is putting forward in his study of C.G. Jung and then his own studies, is die before you die. We are not seeking to perfect ourselves in any way. We are just seeking to get rid of all these filters. And that is another way of saying die before you die. Die to this human idea of yourself before you die. And then you're really living. Then you're really contributing in your time here on Earth. Then you are really contributing to your family and leaving a legacy. That legacy may involve other things, but this is really the legacy, is to have been an example of somebody who was able to keep that portal space open. There could be no more brilliant jewel than that. So if I'm to invoke another goddess here, this is Persephone's realm, and we've talked about Persephone before, and she is in the topside world for part of the year, but she is also queen of the underworld. She has gone into Hades or the underworld itself and knows how to come and go and navigate that space. She is able to inspire the death before the death. She is able to navigate that terrain. So our work is with Persephone and dying before we die. So to summarize, you know, we have this idea of love and strife. Continue to work with that. We have this idea of everything is divine. Continue to work with that. Now let's layer in metis. And dying before we die, meaning letting these filters and identities fall away as we discover and get to experience who we really are. I will add one other thing here, and that is, when it is difficult, surrender and bow to the darkness. Bow to it. That doesn't mean you're empowering it or saying it should stay there forever. It just means I see you and it is dark. It is difficult and I bow to that and I get my equilibrium again as fast as I can. It's saying I see you. I see how crazy, how difficult, how horrific the images on the stage can be sometimes, and I bow to the mystery of what that is serving. We can't possibly know intellectually, but I bow to that, I surrender, and I drop back in as fast as I can to this state of metis, to this alertness, to this cunning, to this intelligence that knows what to do and knows how to comfort and knows how to love in the big sense. Not just in the Aphrodite play on the stage. And the other thing I'll add there is, instead of any time slipping into a judgment, beware. beware of when the mind is wanting to categorize or dissect or judge something, and maybe just ask a question right then. Just say, what's happening? What's really happening here? That's enough. That's enough to put that spaciousness right in there again and help you hold that state of metis. And before I conclude, then, I want to share a passage from Peter Kingsley's Catafalque. And this is him following that very guidance system in a remarkable passage that he writes about, where his own work starts to intersect with the work of C.G. Jung. And I was so inspired by this passage that I just wanted to read it straight, word for word, out of his text. And so just allow yourself to hear this story, because listening to a story is a great way to drop into metis as well. Here's Peter Kingsley. I must have been about 14 at the time. The situation is still perfectly clear to my mind. A girlfriend in London invited me round to her family home. My parents are out for the whole evening, and I remember thinking, well, maybe now I'm gonna get lucky. When I arrived, the first thing she did was to take me straight into the living room. Quietly, she said, there is something I'd like you to see, before switching on the television, just as a documentary was starting about a man I had never heard of. There was some impressive views of a magic-looking castle that the peculiar man, called Jung, had built on the edge of a lake, and they awakened something in me, strangely moved me. But for years, all that stayed in my memory was the ghostly image of a tower beside a lake, and that was that. First, I had to go through all my teens, followed by every 20. There are so many experiences we need to have. Soon, I was into my early 30s and confronted with what back then seemed the most impossibly difficult period in my life. One day, a resolution took shape inside me that it was time to get away. I had only just learned to drive, so I packed some things in a car, got up before dawn the next morning to go down to Dover and catch the first ferry for Calais. Then I did the same thing I used to do so often as a teenager when I was searching, seeking, but didn't even have the remotest notion of what I was looking for. I would stand hitchhiking at the side of the road, any road, and take the next ride that came along, letting the road itself guide me. And now in the car, I just drove without the slightest idea where I was going. I would stop to stretch my legs, have a bite to eat, keep an eye on the car's own needs for petrol and water and oil. Otherwise, though, I simply allowed the road to take me, without a map, without even paying the least attention to any of the directional signs. It was getting dark when I found myself at the French-Swiss border, but still I didn't have the tiniest interest in where this thoughtless experiment was taking me. Choicelessly, I left the highway, watched myself driving along smaller roads, then streets, out into the cold December countryside. My only consolation was that I had a good sleeping bag and would be able to curl up comfortably on the back seat. I was pulled onto a country lane, caught sight of a railway track running close by. At one point, something beyond any conscious control unexpectedly told me to stop. I pulled over, with some difficulty, into the tall grass growing beside the road. And then it was as if I was being drawn physically out of the car, forced to cross the road, walk straight ahead into the pitch darkness without being able to see a thing in front of me. My only thought was that I hoped I'd be able to find my way back to the car. After blindly groping forward and sometimes stumbling, I started noticing a sharpness in the air. I felt I heard a strange murmur, sensed I could glimpse a hint of something shifting in front of me. Suddenly, I stopped, realizing I had come to the edge of water. Then it was as if I was being yanked to my left, guided near the water's edge. There seemed to be some obstacles, but nothing was clear except for a single white blur that appeared ahead of me. I came closer, saw with difficulty that it was some kind of stone and experienced the abrupt, almost unceremonious need to sit down. My last thought was how lucky I happened to be, at least to be wearing a warm coat. And then any sense of myself was gone. I was no longer who I had been a minute ago, a lifetime ago. Without any warning or even the subtlest kind of transition, I had turned into something totally different, and yet no other than myself. Just as sharp and clear as if I was meeting my own image right in front of me, I was a knight. My hair, I noticed, had become a pitch but shining black. I was a warrior in the fullest sense, immensely powerful and destructive, but in a proper, not a vicious way. I was being confronted with myself as a destroyer. Even more, I was being shown the perils and dangers in this, the immensely difficult process of learning how to trust myself with this, how to discover and keep discovering its timeless essence, which will always be beyond every positivity as well as negativity. But at the time, even to want to name this is to let it disappear. And then in a stunning, dramatic moment, the moon came out from behind the clouds, close to full. Immediately, everything was transformed. I glanced up and around, and to my amazement, I was right in front of the tower I had seen on television all those years ago, the tower built by the man called Jung. Let's lean into trusting this. Let's lean into the unknown. It wants to be known through us. And until next time, take good care. Thank you. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.